Welcome into the 49er Access Podcast. My name is Sterling Bennett, and today we are going to react to a wild Friday for the San Francisco 49ers. They made five roster moves, made a handful of restructures, and we're going to dive into every single one of them. Isaac Yiadom, Devondre Campbell, Chase Lucas, where does this team continue to trend in their free agency, journey? And we're going to dive into every single move they made yesterday. And let's be honest here, if we're going to talk about free agency, it cannot just start off with the San Francisco 49ers. First off, feel free to put your comments in the chat. I will get to every single one of them. Hope you're having a wonderful Saturday afternoon. If you're on the East Coast, if you're on the West Coast, it's 11:30 in the morning, and it's a beautiful day in the Bay Area, and it's an even prettier day. A wonderful start to the weekend when you hear that Aaron Donald, Los Angeles Rams future Hall of Famer, arguably their greatest defensive player of all time, bona fide Hall of Fame talent, bona fide legend of the past 15 years in the NFL, arguably the best defensive player of the past decade in football, he called it quits yesterday, surprised many people, including myself, and to learn that San Francisco not only brought back John Feliciano in the morning, on the same day, a few hours later, the Los Angeles Rams lose their best interior defensive lineman. I do want to say Aaron Donald, great career. How awesome for him. He won a Super Bowl. Unfortunately, had to beat us to get there, but he won a ring. Congratulations to him. Capped off an amazing career. I am surprised, though, you'd think that after coming back last year, he'd want to run things back this year because the Rams should be a lot better this season. But the Rams didn't stop there. Aaron Donald retires. We're like, oh my goodness, it's so great. Then all of a sudden, a couple hours later, check my phone. It goes, bring, bring. I go, oh, what does the alert say? Oh, Jimmy freaking Garoppolo is going to be Matthew Stafford's backup quarterback in Los Angeles. And I'm not going to lie to you. When I read that, I laughed. I said, really? Okay. That's odd. First off, I will say this. We are a pro Jimmy G show. We don't hate Jimmy G. We're very thankful for his time in the red and gold. Albeit his tenure in Las Vegas lasted one season, and the way it ended here in San Francisco wasn't the prettiest way, but it wasn't the worst, mind you. That said, I am happy for Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm happy that, albeit he's not going to play the first month and a half of the season because of a PED suspension, of all things. I'm happy he still has a job. He's a good guy. Locker room likes him. It makes sense to bring him in to be Matthew Stafford's backup, knowing that Matthew Stafford has been hurt a lot the past few seasons. And no longer is it going to be Carson Wentz or what John Wolford with the Rams. It'll be, I guess you can say, a proven talent, maybe. At least there's a resume behind a player like Jimmy Garoppolo. Bobo, again, Aaron Donald retires. Jimmy G joins the hated Rams. Like, is Garoppolo joining the Rams, like, is that like a rivalry thing? Because at this point, like with Jimmy G, for as much as I like him as a person and happy for him, like Khalid says here, feels great, baby. Like, I'm not worried. It's not like, oh man, I can't believe he's a traitor. It's like, yeah, like, okay. Like, I'm more angry at Eric Kendricks, who never played a snap here, going to the Cowboys, than Jimmy Garoppolo joining the Rams. Like, I more so have sympathy for Jimmy and empathy towards him rather than Eric Kendricks. I'm like, oh, I go to the Cowgirls, like, traitor. And I'm Jimmy, I'm like, oh, you know, okay, like, maybe we'll see you play. Like, I'm moving to Southern California in a few months, but I'm also someone who's like, hey, in a few months, if there's a bye week, I want to go see Jimmy G play football. I never got to see him play when he was with the Niners. I'll go see him play for the Rams. I will not root for them to win, but I'll go see him play. Like, I harbor no hate for Jimmy G joining the Rams. Like, this is not Jerry Rice going to the Raiders, or T.O. going to the Cowboys, or insert player, or Charles Haley going to the Cowboys. It's not anything like that. It's like, okay, like, all right, Jimmy, like, cool. Like, whatever. Like, I feel no animosity towards him for joining what is supposed to be arguably our biggest rival in the division. And then after that, so the Rams make their move, surprises everybody. The Philadelphia Eagles also make a trade. And we've seen a handful of, you know, young quarterbacks get traded. Sam Howell goes to Seattle, which I think I laughed at that more than the Jimmy G thing, because Sam Howell, for as good as he can be, is a turnover machine. But then the Philadelphia Eagles, they go and get Kenny Pickett. And I'm like, what the heck? Like, okay. Like, you want to get tiny hands? You know, Kenny Pickett, fine. Like, I have plenty of Pittsburgh Steelers friends that are fans of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they were overjoyed. Now, they aren't very pro-Russ, but when they saw Kenny Pickett was going to be gone, they were like, thank God. Like, this guy, like, he averages less than one touchdown per game in, like, 24 career games. Like, he is not good. And he gets the backup, Jalen Hurts, so maybe that'll figure things out. Gets to stay in the same state, going from Pittsburgh to Philadelphia. Maybe it works out for them. But all that to say, and the reason why I bring up Kenny Pickett's name is because in that draft, that is the Brock Purdy draft class. And I know this offseason, because we have the quarterback stuff figured out here, we haven't really talked about Brock Purdy. But I wanted to run down you the list of quarterbacks in his draft class to make you not just think how lucky we are, but how this mind-boggling and how hard it has been the past two drafts to find franchise quarterbacks. So you can go back 2021. There's five quarterbacks taken in that first round. Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Mac Jones, Justin Fields. Fields is probably going to get traded soon. Jones has already been traded. Lance already got traded. And Zach Wilson is going to get cut. Like that, like Trevor Lawrence is the only first round quarterback in the 2021 class to still have a job. And even the Jaguars are like, we're going to play, you know, the teeter-totter game, pay you, not pay you with Trevor Lawrence. Then you walk into 2022, and Kenny Pickett, 20th overall, the only first-round quarterback, traded. Desmond Ridder, 74th overall, traded. Malik Willis can't even find the field in Tennessee. Matt Corral, out of the NFL. Bailey Zappi, I don't know how he still has a job. He's a Patriots backup. Sam Howell gets traded. And of the past 2 years, what is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 12 quarterbacks of name value that have played in the NFL, either good in college or had name value in the first round of 2021. 12 quarterbacks. Only two you consider franchise guys. Trevor Lawrence and Brock Purdy. Like, San Francisco, yes, got lucky, struck gold, whatever you want to say. Like, Brock Purdy is the best quarterback in his class. And it's so funny because people point to the negativity towards that draft class 2 years ago in 2022. But it's like, man, like the fact that Brock Purdy is the best quarterback in that draft class, and you can even make an argument for at least play on the field, not potential, not physical attributes. He's proven more than Trevor Lawrence has. Now, systems are different, fine. But Brock Purdy so far in 2 years has at least accomplished more than Trevor Lawrence. Like, if I told you 4 years ago, 3 years ago, that Brock Purdy, amongst names like Justin Fields from Ohio State at the time, Trevor Lawrence, and amongst others, would be the best quarterback of 12 others drafted ahead of him in two drafts, right? You would laugh at me. No way. No way. But that's the reality. Like, we know the Brock Purdy story is incredible. There's the whole Kurt Warner bagging groceries, never had a chance. But Brock Purdy's story to me, because he was going up against the top of the top. They were calling Trevor Lawrence, and I think Trevor Lawrence can still be great, but they were calling him the best quarterback prospect since Peyton Manning, since Andrew Luck, and Brock Purdy, albeit again, different situations and systems and teams, has outplayed him, has outperformed him, has outaccomplished him. Now, what does it mean? Nothing. This year means nothing. Like, all the accomplishments you have the past couple of seasons, if you don't win at all, kind of mean nothing, right? But again, all that to say that Brock Purdy is the most accomplished quarterback of the past 2 years. And he was the last pick of all of them. It's just crazy. It's crazy to think about. Like, I know we can get caught up in how great Purdy is, but like, sit back and just realize, like, holy crap. Like, if I wanted the curse, I would, but like, holy crap. Like, what Brock Purdy had, his story's already incredible, but like, there's so much improbability within that story that's already insane that makes me sit back and go, how did we find this? We fell into Brock Purdy. Like, by all means, fell into him, and I couldn't be happier. There was some other news with San Francisco. They restructured Javon Hargrave and restructured George Kittle. They also restructured Kyle Juszczyk a few days ago. And what was once thought to be around a $2 million cap saving actually is like a $6 million cap saving, so a lot higher than what was initially thought. So San Francisco, as of right now, unless some news breaks during the show, has roughly $16 million in cap space. That is before the deals they made yesterday and Leonard Floyd's deal become official. They also re-signed John Feliciano yesterday to a one-year deal. We talked about plenty of times this made the most sense. The guard market was just blew me out of the water this offseason. Whether it was the Rams paying for two guards, paying big money. Robert Hunt got $100 million this offseason. And I'm sure John Feliciano costs like five or six. Like, there's no way they're paying him, you know, upwards of 10. Like, they're going to get themselves, and as PFF would say, amongst 200 qualified players, John Feliciano ranked 15th among offensive linemen. 15th. Trent Williams was the only other Niners lineman higher than him. He ranked 4th in run block, 24th in pass block. He was the second highest graded zone blocker. And it's funny because you'll hear people, it's not enough. It's not enough. I'm still sick. I'm sorry. They have 10 draft picks to draft the right tackle, fill the voids, fill the needs. Will they? They should. But right now, this offseason is going exactly how we expected it to go for San Francisco. And that includes bringing back, just like, in a way, Brock Purdy, one of the biggest bargain deals on the market, in John Feliciano, who was excellent for you down the stretch. And you might hear 24th in pass blocking and go, that's not good. There's 32 teams. That's 24th out of 200. He's in the top quarter of pass blocking offensive linemen in the entire league. So John Feliciano being back was a no-brainer, especially when you see other teams in your own division paying up for guards, paying tens of millions of dollars, $50 million for guards who arguably are worse in pass coverage and aren't as good run blockers. Like, John Feliciano being brought back was a stability move, and he even said in his Instagram post, The Last Dance, I don't know if that means The Last Dance for this group. I don't know if that means, hey, I'm going to give San Francisco one last year, or this is John Feliciano's last year in the NFL. He's going to get paid. He's made his millions. He has a family. Maybe this is his, you know, sayonara. See you later. I'm going to retire after this year for the NFL, and he's going to give the Niners one last chance to win it all. If that's the case, great. Run this sucker back, baby. John Feliciano makes a lot of sense. He strengthens your O-line. You put in that right guard. If you can get that right tackle, McKivitz goes to swing tackle. If anything, this just gives you more flexibility within your offensive line scenario. Burford stays on the bench. You have Zakel. They seemingly like Ben Bartsch a lot. I gave him a higher guarantee than I expected. He's been their kind of backup guard, backup center the last year, so maybe we see him in there. Maybe Burford gets cut. I have no idea what his salary is. I'm sure it isn't very high, being a fifth-round pick. Maybe he gets cut. They also brought back Chris Conley to a one-year deal. Again, I'm sorry. I'm still sick. I apologize. Chris Conley makes some sense to bring back. Excellent special teamer. You go to the Super Bowl, making a handful of plays. I mean, he put San Francisco's defense in position to succeed by limiting the Kansas City special teams unit to like 1 yard a return. Like, he was blowing up Richie James Jr. all game long. No brainer to bring him back. I'm sure it's a cheap deal. He's not going to ask for much. Veteran player in that room where you have a lot of question marks. You have Ronnie Bell, who many fans like, but doesn't have a designated role. You have Danny Gray, who I would not be surprised if he gets cut this year, to be honest with you, or gets traded for like a seventh round pick somewhere. Like, he just hasn't been able to establish himself despite having the skill set to. Then you have a lot of question marks. Like, bringing Chris Conley back makes a lot of sense for the room. But let's dive into the signings they had. They had three signings as of yesterday. They had Devondre Campbell, Chase Lucas, and Isaac Yiadom. Yes, it is Yiadom. It is not Yiadom, as his name looks like it's spelt out Y-A-Y-I-A-D-O-M. It's Yadom, not Yadom. But let's dive into Devondre Campbell, because we talked about this move, I believe, on Thursday when the initial report that they were interested in him came out. And I like Devondre Campbell, but there are a lot of issues I have. Over the last 2 years, he's not been that all-pro player he once was. And I think a lot of that is when you seemingly have Eric Kendrick signed. We were hyped for that. We talked about how good of a move that would have been for this defense. You lose him, and now you kind of find yourself in a desperate, you know, kind of, what do we do? Oh, go get Devondre Campbell. And to a certain degree, that's okay. You have to make a move. There isn't many moves out there to make in a very thin linebacking market. There isn't really one in the draft to acquire that makes a big, just big statement instantly. There's no impact players immediately unless you're drafting a second-round linebacker, which I don't think this team looks at it and says, wow, our biggest need is a second-round linebacker. Fred Warner wasn't even a second-round guy. He's a third-round guy. Like, this team has never picked Reuben Foster counts, but yikes. anyways, so they go sign Devondre Campbell. He's 31 years old. He's a former 2021 All-Pro. That's fine. But he's missed 10 games the last two seasons, ankle injuries, neck injuries. There's been some, aging with that. You know, once you get older and your body breaks down, you naturally get slower when you get older. And when your body breaks down in that process, you then start to see your play dip. He's missed 21 tackles the past two seasons. And I DM'd Marcus Whitman, who's a Packer fan, covers the NFL. He is that franchise guy on YouTube. And I said, look, Marcus, I said, you got to help me understand the Devondre Campbell move. And Marcus kindly replied to me and said, look, I think he'll be a good stopgap for you with Dre Greenlaw being out. All right, cool. But he also added this, that Devondre Campbell in run defense, which I know many fans are pointing to, man, like, we have to improve the run defense. And while I would agree, moves like Jordan Elliott, Malik Collins, Kevin Givens being brought back, Gross Matos, and Floyd will certainly improve that grouping. Excuse me again. A player like Devondre Campbell's not going to do that for this group. Apparently, he's super passive in run defense. He is not a great block taker. Now, if you don't know what a block taker is, go back and watch that Lions game. What a block taker is when the opposing team is running an outside zone or an inside zone, but let's use the outside zone, for example, and that guard pulls out, and that tight end pulls out, and you have your running back, the ball carrier, and a receiver, a tight end, and a guard running in front of them trying to create space to gain yardage, okay? Your defense, you're going to have designated block takers, guys who are going to purposefully block the guard, purposefully block or try to get in the receiver's way to allow people behind them to fill the void and make the tackle. Devondre Campbell's not a great block taker. He's passive in run defense. He's not going to be someone to insert himself into an outside zone play of, hey, we have Jahmyr Gibbs, and he has three blockers in front of him. We need you to take out one. Devondre Campbell's like, I don't know. Like, that's just not my game. Now, I think San Francisco, like, there's a lot of rumors, and Devondre Campbell's hinted at some issues with the Green Bay coaching staff, so who knows how much of this is injuries, age, and he was obviously displeased with his role with the Packers. Maybe there was this conversation, or at least inside of him being like, hey, like, I'm not happy here. I'm not saying he's playing bad on purpose, but we all know, you have a job. If you're not happy at your job, sometimes your production dips. I worked at Walmart for a very short time. We were screamed at, yelled at. It was like, this is not how I want to, live my life as an employee of this company. You know what? Like, my production's gonna dip. I am being demoralized here. I don't want to work here. Devondre Campbell, to me, feels like that's what happened. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's just speculation, but he's been very open and honest about, hey, I was not happy in Green Bay. They treated me poorly, and he wanted out. there was an issue with him, or one of the reasons as to why he felt that way, because in 2021, they gave him one role to play. And he talked about after 2021 is All-Pro season, that in 2022 and 23, they essentially told him, you're not just going to play one role. You are not going to be just one thing. You have to play Mike, Sam, and Will for us. And I do think for him, when he talks about being misused in Green Bay, that's what he means. He's not going to come in and play Mike, Sam, and Will linebacker positions. He wants to just play one thing and focus on that one thing. And that's okay. You have certain defensive line players that are just edge or just pass rushing specialists. You have run defending edge rushers. You have guys that can only do one thing very well. If Devondre Campbell's that guy and San Francisco can maximize that one thing, okay, they're getting a revitalized Devondre Campbell doing something he's really good at. And they, if they can get somewhat of that 2021 form back, because let's be honest here, while his stats may say in coverage, 390 yards given up, 3 touchdowns, a 135.7 rating when targeted, the worst of his career, it's really bad. Really, really bad. Man. Really bad. And when you compare him to Dre Greenlaw, where again, Devondre Campbell, 76.5 completion percentage allowed compared to Dre Greenlaw's 63.6. Devondre Campbell, 12 yards per target. Dre Greenlaw, 4.6. There is a massive drop-off in pass coverage from Devondre Campbell to Dre Greenlaw. I don't know how much of that is the Green Bay scheme and system. There are talks, or there was reports, that while it wasn't a complete overhaul in scheme, the Packers did go to a more heavy zone coverage scheme from 2021 compared to or in 2022 compared to what they did in 2021. Yes, Joe Barry was still there, but you can find reports all over the internet that, hey, their secondary benefited from that zone coverage or heavier zone coverage scheme in 2022 and 23 compared to 2021. Maybe that was the reason as to why Campbell wasn't happy. Maybe that's the reason as to why, along with the injuries and the age, that, hey, his coverage skills did drop off. And let's also be very clear here. The Packers' defense, their secondary has not been good the past few years. It's been Jair Alexander and Darnell Savage outside of last season. And even last season, they were not amazing. Like, the talent around him has not been stellar. It's been fine, but it's not been stellar. A lot of their bread and butter has been Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith's. Like, I believe he was playing next to Blake Martinez, who is, like one of the worst linebackers in football. So I don't, when I look at Devondre Campbell, the stats may say one thing, and I do think there is a definitive drop in play from Greenlaw to Campbell, but I do think that if they can put Campbell in a position to succeed, he looks like he's ready and willing to prove a lot of people wrong. And when you get that energy behind you, it makes you play better, and it does kind of energize you into being a better player. It pushes you to try harder. And I think Devondre realizes, hey, I'm going to get to play Green Bay this year. Bring him on. I want to prove to my former team they misused me. And if he plays well and Greenlaw comes back, that it's when it gets tricky, because what does Devondre Campbell want to do? That's when it gets, you know, if he only wants to do one thing, and they bring in Dre Greenlaw, is Campbell fine being a number three linebacker or not playing very much? Whereas San Francisco runs a 4-3, they're going to be in their base downs, they're not going to be nickel. Is Campbell going to be on the field very much? Are they going to ask Dre to do something different? We'll obviously find out, but that's all kind of up in the air currently, and we'll have to see it play out. Going back to what Marcus Whitman told me, that he still has good instincts, he still has good eyes in pass defense. Like, he's not someone you put out there and say, go win me a game. He isn't the Fred Warner. He isn't the Dre Greenlaw. But it almost feels like that, despite the downtick in stats, despite his poor play the past couple seasons and the injuries he's had, that Devondre Campbell still has the traits, albeit has lost a step physically with his speed and stuff. He still has the instincts to make him successful. And for a 31-year-old veteran stopgap, I am willing to give that guy a chance. Come in here. You're an all-pro 2 years ago. Yeah, you'll be older. Be a little slower. But if you have the instincts, you're a vet. And if you can almost in a way mix and match him with Flanagan Fowles or D. Winters and Jalen Graham, fine. Do all that until Greenlaw gets back. And if you can make that work, that's a win-win for San Francisco. And you have yourself a suitable stopgap starting linebacker until Greenlaw gets healthy. That's awesome. That's exactly what you want. Would I want Eric Kendricks? Of course I would. Much better in coverage. Much better missed tackle rate than Devonta Campbell. But he chose to go elsewhere. You have to pivot. Campbell may have been their best option. Many fans wanted Devin White. I can tell you this now. Whenever San Francisco plays Philadelphia this year, you are going to be happy they picked Devin White and not us. He's a name. He's 26. I believe he's that young still. He has lost a step. He is not the Super Bowl winning linebacker he once was. Like, talk about a fall from grace. He's a fine linebacker. I would much rather have Devondre Campbell, even though I didn't want him that much, compared to Devin White. Let's move to the second move they made yesterday. And that was signing Lions cornerback and special teamer Chase Lucas to a one-year deal. This move, to me, it's not a big one. It's not going to be a starting cornerback. They may have made that one later yesterday afternoon. But Chase Lucas, the move to sign Chase Lucas meant one of two things. One, they are adamant of bolstering this team's special teams. How many times in big games, especially against Green Bay this past postseason, did you see this special teams give up a massive return? And you're like, guys, like, you're killing me. Like, you, like, when the game's in the balance, what you can't do is give the opposition better field position. And that's what this unit continued to do. I mean, Jake Moody missing field goals to poor tackling. Like, they bring back Chris Conley, a special teams player. They bring back Demetrius Flanagan Fowles, a special teams player. And they go sign Chase Lucas, who was a primary gunner for the Lions. Like, this was a move to not, hey, let's not deepen the cornerback room, okay? This was, hey, let's strengthen our special teams unit. He's not a returner. He's not going to do punts or kicks. He is going to be the gunner for this special teams unit. Like, he's only played, like, 35 cornerback snaps the past couple years. Like, he's not going to be on the field defensively. In fact, I think the reason why he was brought in, because this team is out on Samuel Womack. You'll see people on Twitter or X point out, well, you know, Womack is this team's backup nickel. No, he's not. No. San Francisco did not have Womack take one snap at nickel and OTAs last year in minicamp and training camp. It was Isaiah Oliver, a little bit of Lenore, and Deshaun Jameson with Trey Swilling mixed in. They do not want Womack playing nickel. He's an outside cornerback. He's too grabby to play nickel. They want him on the outside. This team, in my opinion, brought in Chase Lucas to eventually weed out Samuel Womack in the cornerback room. Because look at their cornerback room now, and we'll talk about Yadam in a minute. You have Mooney Ward, you have Lenore, Ambry Thomas, you add in Yadam, you add in Chase Lucas, and you have Daryl Luter Jr. Okay, you already got six guys. You got six guys, and you're probably going to draft somebody. It makes more sense to me to draft a nickel cornerback. They love Andrew Phillips. And like Khalil says here, are they out on Thomas? I can almost guarantee you that the Yadam signing doesn't mean they're out on Ambry. He's just too inconsistent to start for them. That's the issue. He's fine being a fourth, fifth cornerback. They're much further out on Samuel Womack, who didn't even suit up the last, 2 months of the year? He was hurt for a small portion of time, but even when he was healthy, he wasn't playing. He was not playing. This team activated Jason Verrett over Samuel Womack. This team activated Daryl Luter Jr. on a rookie contract where he didn't have an entire offseason program over Samuel Womack. Now, maybe there's an injury we don't know about. That's fine. He wasn't on IR. He wasn't on the injury report at all. later in the season. He was just flat out an inactive player. You bring in Chase Lucas, what was Womack's primary role? Special teams gunner when he was healthy. Now, I thought he was okay at it, but I think they view it as, look, Womack is a young player that has yet to find his footing. He's actively not going to help us win now. I'm not saying they're going to cut him. I'm just saying he might be buried on the depth chart so far because I think they like Luter Jr. a lot. And if they draft the nickel, where does Womack play? He's not playing over Lenore, Mooney Ward, Yatum. He already isn't playing over Ambry Thomas, and they like Luter a lot. So as of right now, he's your sixth cornerback, and you just brought in Chase Lucas. Like, I think that is an instant replacement of Samuel Womack, and I think it has been more consistent and successful in the gunner role than Womack has in the past. Let's move on to Isaac Yatum. This was arguably San Francisco's biggest and surprising signing of the day because they were tied, or at least many fans pointed to Tre'Davious White, who I thought could be that kind of Richard Sherman off the Achilles tear like Sherman was in 2018 for us, then come in and, you know, play a year or two and, you know, kind of spruce up the defensive secondary on this team. They didn't go that route. That's fine. I'll be honest with you, I don't think anybody and their mother was like, go get Isaac Yatum. You were like, who the heck is Isaac Yatum? And I think that was kind of my response to when they signed him. But 7-year pro, played for the Texans for a while, played for the Saints last year, started 8 games, had 1 interception, 14 pass breakups, and opponents had an 84.4 pass rating when targeting him. I didn't know much about him, but when you dive into the statistics and what he put on the field and tape last year, it's pretty impressive. Now, we have no idea how much they paid for a 1-year contract, but I was not someone who believed they were going to go pay up big. I'm not someone who buys into the go-get Patrick Surtain. He did great to have here. I just think you're going to have to give up too much and then pay a young player big money, which I'd rather extend Mooney Ward, pay Lenore, and figure out cornerback 2 or 3 later. So they get Isaac Yatum, and diving into his stats for a second, he was number 3 in football in completion rate allowed, behind Joey Porter Jr. for the Steelers, Martin Emerson Jr., and Isaac Yatum being number 3. Again, had I told you, who's Isaac Yatum? I don't know. Well, in fact, he's the 3rd lowest completion rate allowed. Like, if this is the guy you're going to get opposite Mooney Ward, or at least mix into your rotation, that's a good player to have. He's a vet, 7-year pro. In regards to playing press coverage, which San Francisco likes to play at times, it's not super consistent. You'll see, take Ambry Thomas, for example, like Klee Young brings up. Go back to that Packers game. Who got burnt like toast in that Packers game? Ambry Thomas. What did he do after that? He was playing press coverage. He got burnt, I believe. He was playing so far off, guys. He was giving Jaden Reed, Romeo Doubs free, Dontayvion Wicks free 8-yard catches. And it was like, dude, you have to be aggressive here. They're marching to put the game away. And he was like, I'm too scared. I am too scared. You know who's not going to be scared to play press coverage in big moments? Isaac Yatum. Yards per coverage when in press coverage, barely above 0.5. In fact, that stat becomes more impressive, just above half a yard, okay? That stat becomes more impressive when you realize he played press coverage 45% of his time last year, which was the most in football. So he's playing the most press coverage and allowing just barely half a yard. That is extremely impressive. You have a player that will get up on the line, get physical with players like DK Metcalf. He isn't the biggest guy, but he also has the tools to catch back up. Go watch the, it may have been 2018, maybe 2017. I can't remember the year exactly. Go back and watch the Niners versus Texans. Jimmy G's a quarterback. Isaac Yatum, he has good instincts. I think he almost picks off Jimmy. Maybe he does. But, like, he runs off his route completely to go get the ball. Like, really impressive cornerback, vet player. He had the fifth best success in man coverage last year. And when you already have Mooney Ward that you can play man coverage with, and you bring in Isaac Yiadom, who you can also play man coverage with, that only adds versatility to the coverages you can run with your secondary. That could give your defense of line more time to get home. It also allows your safeties to play more freely, and it also allows you to target certain players better. Like, a lot of the conversation against the Chiefs was, okay, you're going to have Logan Ryan, a bigger body nickel slash safety on Travis Kelce. Maybe you put a linebacker on him too. Great. Mooney Ward wasn't even following the Chiefs' best receiver. Now you have somebody else. So I'm not going to say he's going to shadow somebody all game, but if he's in man coverage, he's not going to get cooked to pieces like Ambry Thomas might. It strengthens them. It deepens what they can do. Again, he's one of the best, if not the best, press coverage corners in football. Like I already said, just above a half a yard per press coverage snap, despite having the most press coverage snaps in football at 45%. It's really impressive. For a move that I wasn't even... Isaac Yiadom, I was like, okay, whatever. Like, didn't even think about adding him. Like I talk about here all the time, even at times, I can get caught up in name value. Levi Wallace, Tre'Davious White, and those guys can be successful wherever they go. But it's a smart moves like Isaac Yiadom that might pay off, who has a track record of continued success. He's a former starter this past year. He can play man coverage very well. He can play press coverage extremely well. And it's only going to strengthen your secondary that already has two really good cornerbacks. One of them, an ascending nickelback in Lenore. And also, let's be honest here. If Isaac Yiadom is the starting outside cornerback and Lenore is your nickel all year, what does that do? It means you get to pay Lenore a little bit less money. Either they view him as an outside cornerback, which they might in a couple years' time, but if he plays nickel, which he has the past two seasons, nickelbacks do not get paid as much. You can re-sign him for a cheaper contract, extend him for a cheaper contract, lower cap hit, and you can retain arguably one of the best nickelbacks in football on a cheaper contract. It's a very small thing to add into the conversation, but, and it maybe didn't even factor into what the conversation was for San Francisco, but it's certainly something you mention and say, hey, where can we save a penny here or there? The cap's going to get higher, but so is our cap. So are the cap hits. When you're pushing money, Kittle's money's down the road, Juszczyk's money's down the road, cap hits are only going to get higher on certain players. If you can save a little bit with Lenore playing him at nickel, it's never a bad thing. Never a bad thing. I do want to talk about where do they go next, though. Because San Francisco, if I asked you, what holes do they have left? So they brought back Feliciano. They found their linebacker placeholder for Greenlaw. They added what is presumed to be a starting caliber opposite cornerback from Mooney Ward. What do they need left? They're going to re-sign Ayuk, and we'll talk about those Jaguar rumors in a second. They're going to bring back Juwan Jennings. What holes does San Francisco still have? Well, I think they have two. I think the most noticeable hole they have is at safety, which there are still players like Julian Blackman, Ashton Davis, Tracy Walker, Quandre Diggs, and Justin Simmons on the market still. Plenty of names to add. And we already talked about, hey, the article Mike Silver wrote, if they go and they sign a starting caliber safety, Justin Simmons, Julian Blackman, if they sign one of the bigger names, you know what that means for Hufanga's career here in San Francisco. On a contract year, off a torn ACL. If they sign one of the bigger names, take Justin Simmons, for example, to a 2 or 3 year deal, that is not farewell for Hufanga's future here in the red and gold. I like Hufanga. I'm not saying move him away. I'm just saying, if you read some tea leaves, Womack can be gone down the depth chart for certain. And Hufanga on a contract year off a torn ACL, if they don't think he's healthy, in a contract year, and he's like, look, I was a former All-Pro, I'm a young player still, and he wants a bigger contract, depending on what San Francisco does, tells us a ton about what they think about Hufanga's future in the red and gold. Then you have players like Ashton Davis, younger Jets player, wants to start, could come here from the Bay, although he has mentioned in the past he hates California taxes. I don't blame him. But all that to say, you played in New York for your first couple of seasons, so is it really that big of a difference? So they have a hole at safety. Got to find a guy. But then they're also needing a tight end number two. You watched Charlie Warner leave out the door. Now you have a hole. You have Cam Latu, who has proven nothing. You have Braden Willis, who, young player, rookie year last year, made some mistakes, is probably, as of right now, your tight end number two because he's actually healthy. That is not promising. Got to find yourself another tight end. I would not be surprised if they draft one just to have somebody else in that room. I also would not be surprised if they bring back a Ross Dwelly to have a vet behind Kittle who knows the system, has played well in spurts when Kittle has not been on the field. But there are three other guys out there. You can get Mykole Pruitt, or maybe it's Mykole Pruitt, who actually was here in San Francisco for a very short stint, who got cut, then went back to Tennessee, and was in Atlanta last year, and was stellar for the Falcons as their tight end number three behind Pitts and Jonnu Smith, which the Falcons felt good about letting Jonnu Smith leave because they had Mykole Pruitt there somewhere in the building. Then there's players like Logan Thomas with Washington the past few years who knows the system relatively well. Again, it's Washington ties. I don't think he knows Shanahan at all, but he's often injured, but when he's healthy, he's a good vet to have on the field. Then there is Robert Tonyan, who I believe him and Kittle are like the tightest of friends, you know, tight end university guys. Maybe you bring in someone that is a much better receiving tight end like Tonyan. Isn't a great blocker, but I'm sure could flourish in this scheme with Kittle in the building. And I also wouldn't be surprised if Kittle advocates to sign him. He was hurt, I think, 2 years ago, but has since been healthy. Hasn't even had, I think, I don't think he's missed a game in the past couple seasons for Green Bay. Probably more of a tight end number three, if I'm being honest, but in a very thin market. He might be someone they target. We have a question here, though, in the chat by Bobo. As always, Bobo's so great. With the way the team is now structured, do you believe we can win the Super Bowl next season? So, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, Bobo. But I think Coach Yak on X or Twitter put out the odds for the Super Bowl next year. And like we've said all offseason long, it doesn't matter what this team does, really. When you walk into a season, when you have Brock Purdy off a near MVP win, Christian McCaffrey, the offensive player of the year, you bring back Deebo Samuel, you have an all-pro fullback, you're probably going to re-sign Brandon Ayuk, you have George Kittle, you have Juwan Jennings, you have Trent Williams. That alone makes you a top five favorite. Then you walk on the field with Nick Bosa and Fred Warner and Mooney Ward. Like, it really didn't matter what San Francisco was going to do this year, although it does. This, talking about draft or Super Bowl odds, this team was going to be top five no matter what. When you go there the year before, you're going to be top five no matter what. But to be honest with you, I do think San Francisco has improved in some areas, which Khalil Young, again, he's here. The defensive line's gotten better. I agree. We've talked about for the last couple shows, durable, better pass rushing. They've gotten a ton more sacks, and they have 10 picks to still improve upon any grouping they choose. So I do think they've gotten better, and if Yadam can be more consistent than Ambry Thomas, that's an improvement there. They didn't play half a year with Hufanga. Like, they are not replacing Hufanga. They're replacing Deshaun Gibson, Logan Ryan. That's who they're replacing. And so I think if it's Justin Simmons, that's an improvement. And Gibson was great. Like, I'm not discounting him at all. But I do think if Yadin is more consistent than Thomas, defensive line's gotten better with Floyd and Malik Collins and Elliott and Givens, and they can add more pieces there, and you can replace Tashaun Gibson, your defense has gotten better. And then let's say you draft the right tackle and a receiver that actually has an impact this year. Your offensive line's gotten better, and your weapons have gotten deeper. So while it's hard for me to say, yes, we're going to go back, my heart might say that because I want to win so bad. It's always hard to just get back to the Super Bowl, unless you're Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, who are always there. It's hard to get back. We have witnessed that the past four seasons here. All that to say, what team scares you the most as of right now in the NFC? Forget the AFC. Like, who is in our way? The Lions have certainly gotten better. DJ Reader's there now. You have teams like the Rams who have gotten better but just lost their best defensive player in Aaron Donald. Team like Seattle, new scheme, new head coach. They're kind of retooling, revamping what they want to do. They've cut a ton of players. They're kind of, again, in this weird, kind of give them a year or two, they'll be back. Then you have Green Bay, who I think is this team's biggest competitor with Philadelphia. The Dallas Cowboys are going to be good, but they've added nothing outside of Eric Kendricks to their roster. The Giants are the Giants. I get they have Brian Burns. Their quarterback still sinks, and they have no running backs. Washington's cooking, but probably going to have a rookie quarterback. The Bears are interesting if they get Caleb Williams, but the Bears could honestly be still in last place in that division if the Vikings get a quarterback, a not named Sam Darnold. So we'll see there. I do think if you're going to tell me, you know, how does the NFC stack up? It's like, you have San Francisco going to be one of the three seed. You have Green Bay's in that conversation. I think the Eagles are probably going to bounce back a little bit next year. But even then, they're still in the air. Like, who is Philadelphia? So will I say we're going to win it all next year? No. Am I confident we can get back? Yeah, we're running back the same offense that could still get better and arguably in certain areas a better defense. Like, you're going to miss Dre Greenlaw. That's just, you can't ignore that. But I do think San Francisco has actually gotten better than last year's team. Got younger, more durable. And I do think that Niner fans should be excited for what this team can do. Now, you have to go out and produce. We all know this, but I do think they have gotten better. Will I say they're going to go back and win it all? No, because there's a whole draft ahead of us. The Cardinals can get, the Cardinals should be better. And if they get Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers, they have two first-round draft picks this year. They put up like 35 points against us last year. Like, I don't want to sleep on anybody. The Rams, Puka Nacua year two, Tutu Atwell, Cooper Kupp, Matthew Stafford, Jimmy G. Like, the teams in the NFC have gotten better. I don't know if they've gotten good enough to unseat San Francisco, but I do think San Francisco finds themselves at least in that conversation of, could you get the number one seed again? And they're going to have to prove it. They got to stay healthy. But I would not be surprised if they were the three seed. I also wouldn't be surprised if we found ourselves back in the Super Bowl. I'm not going to guarantee you that, but I really would not be surprised. It's a long road. It's super hard to get back. Hard to get there once. We've been there twice in six seasons. So I'm not going to discount a team that's been to the NFC Championship game, five times in 6 years? 19, 21, 22, and last year, so four times in 5 years. Like, I'm not going to discount that team. And so I'd be very excited. Let's address the Brandon Ayuk rumors, because there was a whole, he has mutual interest with the Jacksonville Jaguars, and we talked about, you know, what that could be a couple shows ago, but we did get some clarity on what that actually does mean. Mia O'Brien of 92.5 FM, the home of the Jacksonville Jaguars, said Brandon Ayuk and the Jaguars have quote-unquote mutual interest. What does that mean? Okay, she joined my employer 95-7 the game with Monta Hill and Joe Shasky, and she explained what exactly that means. She said that a Jacksonville source, a source inside the Jaguars, told her there was mutual interest with Brandon Ayuk. She also said that calls had been placed with Brandon Ayuk's camp. Now, if that is not sending off red flags, I don't know what to tell you, because that right there feels like tampering. But I'll explain that in a second. She also said Trent Baalke has been actively making calls to replace Calvin Ridley as his team's number one receiving option. Okay, so Ayuk, T. Higgins are kind of the big names that are rumored to be traded, although T. Higgins is definitely wanting out of Cincinnati because he wants a new contract. But here's the kicker. Ridley shares an agent with Brandon Ayuk. So, okay. That right there links back to that mutual interest they've had conversations with Brandon Ayuk, right? Because, yeah, you cannot talk to a player under contract. The Jaguars cannot call Brandon Ayuk's agency, talk to his camp and say, hey, would you like to play in Jacksonville? They're going to say, hey, that's tampering. We are not going to do that. Like, the Eagles and the Falcons are under investigation for talking to Kirk Cousins and his camp and Saquon Barkley's camp before the legal tampering period began on Monday. Like, the NFL could take away draft picks from them if found guilty. Now, I wouldn't put it past Trent Baalke, but I don't think Jacksonville wants to lose draft picks over tampering with, no offense to Brandon Ayuk. Brandon Ayuk! Like, what a waste that would be. He's a great player, but my God, you don't tamper with Brandon Ayuk of all people. If it's Peyton Manning, you tamper. Tom Brady, you tamper. Drew Brees, you tamper. You're not tampering with Brandon Ayuk. Why would you tamper with Saquon Barkley? Kirk Cousins makes more sense. He's a quarterback. Your team needs one. You don't tamper with a receiver on an opposing team. That to say, this feels more like, okay, like Mia O'Brien said, this feels more like Ayuk's reps gauging Ayuk's value across the NFL. I'm just trying to see, okay, what would Jacksonville pay my client if they had the opportunity to do so? They didn't want to pay Calvin Ridley's deal. The Jaguars and Calvin Ridley openly said they did not want to pay me what Tennessee did. And Tennessee gave him like 4 years, $90 million, like 23, 24, whatever it was, million dollars or $50 million guaranteed and 23 on average. Jacksonville said no to that. Like, this could honestly backfire for Ayuk, because if Jacksonville won't pay that, why would San Francisco? Now, they are going to pay Ayuk. That's still, in my mind, a guarantee to happen. Unless someone just says, here's 3 first-round draft picks. Here's pick 17. Which Mia O'Brien even said, Jacksonville is not offering for Brandon Ayuk. We'll give you a second and a third. They didn't give you a 17. Okay. San Francisco is not giving up their best young receiver for anything less than a first-round pick. Like, A.J. Brown went for, what, 18 and, like, pick 101? Ayuk's not going for a second-round pick and a third. Like, Ayuk will go for an A.J. Brown package. Like, that is a definitive guarantee. And anything less will not cut it. All that to say, this is simply the Ayuk camp playing the free agency game. We want to get paid. You know, if you're not going to pay us, we'll go elsewhere and we'll gauge the interest. I wouldn't even be surprised. Now, I have no connection to this, but I wouldn't be surprised if San Francisco said, sure, go see if Trent Baalke wants to pay you. And they watched Calvin Ridley be open and say, look, they didn't want to pay me what Tennessee was going to pay me. Why would the Jaguars give you more money than Ridley? Now, to be fair, Ayuk is younger than Ridley, in my opinion, and others, better than Ridley. But they had the guy in-house and didn't pay him. They're going to trade draft capital, then pay you? That doesn't make sense. That makes sense at all. Like, that's just dumb GMing, and Trent Baalke is used to that. But this feels more just like Aiyuk's camp being like, hey, well, San Francisco, they're giving us this. What can you give us? They're going to give us $52 million guaranteed. What do you want to give Brandon Aiyuk? And San Francisco is like, okay, yeah, right. Like, good luck in Jacksonville, my friend. We still have you under contract. We'll see you on April, what is it, 25th or 26th for the draft. And if you really want out, then they can talk about that pick number 17, which Jacksonville will not trade. So, and also, when the source comes inside of Jacksonville's camp about them talking to Brandon Aiyuk's camp, I mean, really? This just more feels like they were at a roundtable discussion, and they were like, look, we just lost Calvin Ridley. Who can we acquire of equal importance to our offense? T. Higgins and Brandon Aiyuk. Okay, we like these guys. Okay, well, my client is also Calvin Ridley, and my client's also Brandon Aiyuk. Well, if you want Brandon Aiyuk, okay, well then we can have a small side discussion. Like, the mutual interest cannot be formal. It can't be like when the Titans traded A.J. Brown, I can guarantee you that was, hey, A.J., we're not going to re-sign you. We will give you the opportunity to talk to other teams, and you can figure out if they have a contract you like. And we'll see if we can figure out a deal there with the team. That was the day of the draft. We're in March. And San Francisco doesn't even start these conversations until May and June. Like, the mutual interest here just feels like Aiyuk's camp being like, San Francisco doesn't want to pay us now, and we don't want to wait, so let's talk to other teams for a hot second, and let's just gauge the interest. And San Francisco's like, sure, we'll talk to you in May. Like, goodbye. Like, I'm not saying there isn't validity to the Aiyuk rumors to Jacksonville, I'm just saying that the likelihood it happens and how San Francisco does things makes me feel it's slim to none. Like, I would not even doubt it. Like, if San Francisco did not pick up the phone to call Aiyuk until, like, June 1st, I would say, yeah, that's what they do. Like, I would not be surprised. Like, Bosa didn't get paid until, like, week one against Pittsburgh. Now, Bosa isn't Aiyuk, and Aiyuk isn't Bosa, but my goodness, it's not like San Francisco is not okay letting these things linger. Like, we're hearing Debo to the Ravens and all that stuff. Like, even that doesn't make sense. So, I don't think the Jaguars and Aiyuk actually have quote-unquote mutual interest. It's like, hey, Brandon, how does Jacksonville sound? Oh, yeah, that's fine. Like, Brandon Aiyuk's in freaking Mexico right now, partying. Look on his Instagram. You think he's taking calls about the Jaguars? No. Homie's getting lit down in Mexico. He ain't taking calls about... He's taking Jaeger and tequila shots. He's not talking to his agent about playing for Trent Baalke in Jacksonville. Ain't no way. He's in Mexico getting hammered and partying right now. He's not talking about... What about playing in Florida in the Everglades with Trevor Lawrence and Doug Peterson? No, he's out there getting shmammered with a sombrero, and he's partying, taking tequila shots. Like, no, he ain't talking to Jacksonville of mutual interest. It's all just a free agency, money, blah, it's all that is. It's like everyone's got a source now, and I'm not even saying Mia O'Brien's wrong in regards to Jacksonville wanting Aiyuk. Jacksonville should want Aiyuk. He's a good receiver, and they just lost their number one guy. Why wouldn't you want Aiyuk? It doesn't mean Ayuk's like, I want to play for Jacksonville too. It means like, yeah, if SF won't pay me, sure, I'll play for Jacksonville. Why wouldn't I? They'll pay me. But they wouldn't pay Ridley, so why would they pay you equally that money? Like, if they were hesitant to pay Ridley that money, why would they pay you more? Just connecting dots. That's all I'm doing. Anyways, that's all I have for you today. Hope you have a wonderful Saturday, whether it's the afternoon or it's near nighttime. Go out and barbecue. It's a great day. Baseball season's around the corner. And the Giants may stink this year, but I'm getting excited. The sun's out. Like, I am ready for summertime. Spring's almost here. Niner season's almost creeping up again. Free agent season's full swing. The draft's in a month and a half or something like that. It's getting super close. Like, we are reaching peak California weather, and it feels great. Go out there, barbecue, go out in a swimming pool. Like, this is a wonderful weekend in the Bay. If you're on the East Coast, I have no idea what you're doing, but thank you for watching and listening. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. It's the free and easy way to help the show. Tell me what you think of the Niners signings this offseason, especially on Friday. Isaac Yiadom, Devondre Campbell, and Chase Lucas. What do you think happens with Brandon Ayuk? Tell me in the comments below. Again, don't forget to like, share, subscribe. Follow us on social media at 49ers_access is the X or Twitter. 49ers.access is the Instagram. And you can use our promo code 49ersaccess, 49ersaccess at SeatGeek.com to save yourself $20 off your first purchase. Baseball season's coming up. The NBA season is almost in playoff time. And the NFL season is slowly but surely ramping itself back up. I know you guys want that sixth Lombardi. Go to a game this year, buy yourself some tickets, and take $20 off your first purchase by using our promo code 49ersaccess. Again, my name is Sterling Bennett saying don't forget to like, share, subscribe, leave that review. And until next time, like always, stay faithful.